thank you so much. It's so special to be back here again. I'm Leanne, if you weren't here last time I came. I'm married to Ben, who is a children and families worker at Colchester Road Baptist Church, and some of you might know him from his time at CYM. We have two children, Simeon, who's going to be 9 on the 12th of November, and I'm very thankful because I was dreading that this year was the year he was going to ask for a games console, and he's done me proud and he's asked for a fish tank instead. Maisie's 5 and she is just one of those children who finds light and grace in everything and is just always happy and smiling. So that brings a lot of joy into our lives. So this morning we're going to be in Haggai. Now it's a really tiny book in your Bible. About there. It's only 2 chapters long, and we're just going to be reading from chapter 2, verses 1 to 9. On the 21st day of the 7th month, the word of the Lord came through the prophet Haggai. Speak to Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, to Joshua, son of Jehozadak, the high priest, and to the remnant of the people. Ask them, who of you is left who saw this house in its former glory? How does it look to you now? Does it not seem to you like nothing? But now be strong, O Zerubbabel, declares the Lord. Be strong, O Joshua, son of Jehozadak, the high priest. Be strong, all you people of the land, declares the Lord. And work. For I am with you, declares the Lord Almighty. This is what I covenanted with you when you came out of Egypt, and my spirit remains among you. Do not fear. This is what the Lord Almighty says. In a little while, I will once more shake the heavens and the earth, the sea and the dry land. I will shake all nations, and the desire of all nations will come, and I will fill this house with glory. Says the Lord Almighty. The silver is mine and the gold is mine, declares the Lord Almighty. The glory of this present house will be greater than that of the glory of the former house, says the Lord Almighty. And in this place I will grant peace, declares the Lord Almighty. This half term we had the joy of getting off on a holiday. We went off to Derbyshire with all my family to celebrate my dad's 60th birthday. Now, to celebrate, we surprised him on his arrival with 60 challenges that he had to do over our week in Derbyshire, and they ranged from drawing each member of the family in 60 seconds, blowing up as many balls as he could. He was supposed to take 60 selfies over the course of the week, but claimed that his phone was full up and he couldn't possibly do that. I don't think I've ever seen my dad take a selfie. It was great fun. And we came back refreshed and restored and ready to turn back to our normal routines. But what turned out, what we hoped would be a week of normal routines has turned into a week of distractions. On Monday, my children had a PD day, and we were at home about to embark on a slime-making session. We'd just settled down, we'd got all the bits and pieces out there, remembered all the extra bits that we always forget, and I looked out into the garden, and crawling across the back of the garden was something small and prickly. I knew it was a hedgehog, so I ran into the kitchen and grabbed a tea towel and went out in the garden and picked up this tiny little hedgehog. It was so small. And I knew that at this time of year, they should be big enough to hibernate. To hibernate through the winter, they recommend that a hedgehog is between 400 and 450 grams. This hedgehog was only 257, though, and it just wouldn't have survived. The children, though, were so excited. They both rushed off to their bedrooms, tipped their toys out of their toy boxes, and came downstairs determined that their box was going to be the one that would house this hedgehog, and that they wanted to keep it in their rooms for the winter. When I pointed out to them that this hedgehog was in fact covered in fleas, they kind of changed their mind, but I think they were still hopeful that they would be the one to receive the hedgehog into their care. As is normal on days where you need access to somewhere, Ben had taken the keys to the garage with him, so I couldn't get into the garage to find a suitable container. So there was a bucket left in the garden, which the hedgehog just had to put up with until Ben got home from work. And when Ben got home, we got the pet carrier out, we filled the hot water bottle up to get it cosy, put a towel in, some dog food and some water, and it snuggled up and turned into a little ball and settled down. And the children calmed down a bit, but every few minutes I'd get, "Mummy, is the hedgehog poorly? Mummy, why is the hedgehog so small? Mummy, is the hedgehog going to survive the winter?" And so we never really settled for the rest of the day. The hedgehog was constantly in our mind and in our thoughts, distracting us. Before bed, Simeon made sure it had a fresh hot water bottle, and we got some more food for it. It had already eaten a whole plateful. That's a good sign. And in the morning, we got it up and we weighed it, and it already put on 11 grams. Things were looking hopeful for this little one. So thinking now, well, it's probably not poorly, and it just needs a safe place to stay, we found an animal rescue centre who had some space for our little hedgehog prickles. And we took him off, much to the children's disappointment, but on the assurances that in the spring, if this little one survives, prickles can come back and live in our garden. So he's in a safe place. Our little distraction has gone off, and things were meant to settle down. This week hasn't really gone to plan, but we're here now. And actually, the people in this passage were a distracted people. They'd been in exile, and they'd been drawn back to Jerusalem to build the temple. They had a job to do, something they were supposed to be doing, and they'd got distracted. They'd come home. They'd been in exile for over 50 years, and they'd come home. And so distractions were rife. They could put down roots, build their homes, make a safe place for them to stay. And although they'd had made a good start on building the temple, that pull of making home had been greater for them. And so for years they'd been distracted. They hadn't been building the temple as they were called to. And as a result, their harvests were coming back with nothing. This life that they were building for themselves to be safe and secure wasn't working. They didn't have the food and the resource that they needed to live, because they were living the way they wanted to, living, doing things they thought they needed to do, when they should have been building the temple, the job that God had given them to do. The job that's going to bring blessing. When I read this book for the first time, well, it wasn't the first time, I read through the Bible quite a few times, but I've often just skimmed little books like this and thought, oh, that was interesting, I wonder how that fits in, and moved on. But as I sat down to study it, the hairs on the back of my neck started to stand up. I think I've been a bit distracted. I think we can all get a bit distracted. The call of work and of our homes and of our family lives can get so loud, can't they? And maybe those little blessings and those little successes don't last so long. We might decorate our living room. We had our kitchen redone. There was holes in the worktop. It had to be done. And for a few days, it was, oh, we've got a shiny new kitchen, how lovely. And then it's just become a place where we work and we get by, and the blessing didn't last. It's useful, it's helpful, we need it to get by. But it doesn't stay with us. I wonder how much time we spend devoting ourselves to building our homes, to investing in our lives. Culturally now, in our homes, we're more and more unlikely to have people around. We might think our home's not big enough or clean enough or tidy enough. And so our homes become places where we serve ourselves and our own needs and not about serving God. And that's where the Israelites were, serving themselves and not God. Their job to build the temple was the path to blessing. If they'd have gone down that path, building God's house, their harvests would have come back overflowing, because that's what God promised his people when they're obedient to him. But instead, they were returning empty and they needed a wake-up call. They'd been discouraged because they knew as they started building this temple, it was not a shadow of the one that was before. And it was never going to be the same. But they needed to fix their eyes on God and trust him. The blessing to come, Jesus, was going to be greater than the temple. It was a fulfillment of God's promise for everyone. We were made to be a people of God's presence, from the garden to the temple, to that walk with Jesus on the earth, to now with his Holy Spirit here with us. And we walk with him in his presence towards his blessing. But when we get distracted, we need something to call us back, to grab our focus and attention again, back towards those blessings that really last, that are going to transform our realities. And I'm going to just take 3 points from Haggai today. Be strong, work, and do not fear. That command to be strong was repeated 3 times, both to the leader of the people, the high priest, and then to all the people. It wasn't that they needed a strong leader who could lead them forth and that would sort it out. They needed to come together in strength as a community. And that for this task, they didn't just need that emotional strength of character. They needed the physical strength and stamina to build. A whole project, heart, mind, soul, and body. I don't know if you've ever seen the program Grand Designs, but I'm always shocked by the toll it takes on these people who set out to build their own houses. It takes a massive toll on their relationships. It takes far more time than they imagined. It affects how they make decisions and undermines their confidence. Just one family, or sometimes one person, they're on their own, trying to draw this feat together to build their own homes. I think it's interesting to contrast DIY SOS on the other channel. They transform a home with a community, all working together, in a matter of days. One hand on their own, struggling. On the other hand, working as a community, drawing together and succeeding. The temple building was a community project. They all needed to come together. They all needed that strength to be strong, to walk towards God's blessing. Often when I think of someone with a strong character, I think of someone who's made a really good decision in hard circumstances. But I've been reflecting on that recently, and actually, sometimes it's not the decision that's made in the first place, but that perseverance to keep on going and going and walking towards that path that God's called us towards. Is that where we see more strength? We've just said goodbye to a friend of ours. Her name's Alana, and she came to us 2 years ago and said, "Ben, Leanne, I feel called to go out on a gap year when I finish college." We were like, "Brilliant, come round and have a chat about it and we'll pray with you and we'll see what God's saying too." So she came round and we spent an evening dreaming and chatting together. And at the end of the evening, she felt certain that that was what God was calling her to. And although sharing that decision with her family, her dad's not a Christian, was difficult, she was steadfast. She was absolutely certain that God was calling her to go and do this gap year. And so a few weeks ago, we waved her off. And she's in Team Mozambique. And she was so excited. She happened to get the call that she'd got her place when we had our church weekend, so we were all together and could celebrate with her. But the path hasn't been what she thought it would be. At the end of the summer, she got an email to say that Mozambique were having an election and that it wouldn't be safe for them to travel and that they'd have to delay their trip for a month. So instead, they were going to go to Portugal and learn Portuguese, which is the language they speak in the area of Mozambique. And hopefully, at the end of that month, they would be able to go to Mozambique. So off they've gone to Portugal. First day there, they find out their language teacher is ill. And they can't get anybody else to replace them in the same way. And so they were there in a house, four teenagers, on their own, first time away from home, with nothing to do. And no language teacher, and feeling a bit shocked and lost. But they didn't let that get them downhearted. They called out for prayer straight away and contacted all their friends and family back home who had been praying. And the next day, a new language teacher was found, and although they can't come as often, they're starting to learn Portuguese. And so their hearts began to soar again, and their hope was lifted. Maybe it's all going to plan. Until last week, they got another call. Their visas for Mozambique had been turned down. And so VMS sent them back to Lisbon, which is a two-hour journey away from where they're staying, to try and negotiate to get their visas through and find out what process they'd need to do to be granted visas. But nobody at the embassy speaks English, and nobody can read the paperwork that they've already got. And so before they can even proceed, all their paperwork now has to be translated so that they can try and reapply for their visas from Portugal. But they're still so full of hope. They're still so certain that God's called them to do this. They've got that strength of character that I would never have credited Alana with, as much as I love her. As an 18-year-old girl, she spends most of her time in bed, and she's an amazing children's worker, and she really lights up our lives. But I wasn't sure about the strength of her character. But she does. God's in it all, and it's absolutely inspiring to see someone so determined to follow God in that way. They have that strength. And it was a surprise. And I think sometimes when we discover we've got our strength, it's a surprise to us as well. It's not what we thought. You see, having strength to stick with something to the end is harder in some things than in others. But there's something that we're called to do together. And in a community, we find our strength. And our job we do together is to introduce people to Jesus. And it doesn't matter whether we find that hard or easy, or where we sit on that line of, oh yes, I have the gift of evangelism, or I don't really know if I do. That's our job. That's what we've been called to do. Just as the Israelites had been called to build the temple, we have been called to introduce people to Jesus. We haven't been called to build a church with bricks and mortar, but with people. With people being set free and restored. And then who then come in with us in this community to add those gifts and those blessings that we need to grow in our job and do it more and more. And that strength within us comes from God, because he is with us. Just as he promised the Israelites, he is with us now. And those feelings of when we're at our weakest and we can't possibly do it, we've been distracted or weak and we just don't know where to go, that's when he's strongest. That's when we surrender more to him and we work in his strength. And that's what we've been seeing in Alana. And that's what we're called to do too. We're then called from this point of strength to work. It's only given one word in the passage. It's a simple command, work. We actually have to do it. We can't be thinking about it. Can't keep considering the best way. Sometimes we just have to do it. Brave the conversation. Buy someone that gift that you know God might inspire them to bring a bit more of a conversation. Buy that Bible for your father-in-law, even though you're not sure quite how he's going to receive it. We can't keep being distracted. We can't keep playing rounders when we're meant to be playing football. I would have bought a rugby ball, but I didn't know how that would go down this morning. We can't play two games at once. We want to. We see what the world has got to offer, and it seems so good, so shiny. A trip to the cinema, a new cushion for our city. We go into another person's home and we see the way they have it set up so beautifully, and it seems so appealing. But we're called to something more. We have a purpose that's deep inside us, and we can't keep ignoring it. Those things are so temporary, they just don't last. But the things of God are so much richer and deeper and go on and on and on in our lives. And all of us have that role of building God's kingdom. And we don't need to worry ourselves with the things of this world. If we just head to Luke 12 for a moment. Consider how the lilies of the valley grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown in the fire, how much more will he clothe you? Are you of little faith? And do not set your heart on what you will eat or drink. Do not worry about it, for the pagan world runs after all such things, and your Father knows that you need them. But seek his kingdom, and all these things will be given to you as well. You see the shift of focus? Those things aren't things that we don't need, but they're not what we chase after. The things of this world, we need our food and our clothes, but we chase after God, and they'll be given to us. At the start of the summer, I looked at my summer wardrobe and was appalled. What was I going to wear? I had 3 dresses, and they all had holes in. And I wasn't sure where I was going. And then the next week at church, a lady came up to me really timidly with a bag and said, I don't want to insult you, but I've got these clothes I'm not going to wear. Can I give them to you? And I was overjoyed. It was like being a child in a sweet shop. I thought, well, maybe I can cobble a get together a bit of money and buy one more item that I needed. And all of a sudden, I had this big bag, and I couldn't believe it. But then the next week, she came with more. And so my wardrobe is overflowing and I don't even have space to put them. You see, God gives and gives. And I could store up those clothes now and say, well, I might need them next year. I haven't worn that this year, but I might need it next year. Or I can give it to somebody else who needs it. We don't need to keep storing up and storing up. We need to surround ourselves with people who inspire us in our work, who give us faith that we're on the right path, that we're on our right track, that we're gathering strength from being together in this community. And I want to share with you this morning the story of my friend called Val. Some of you might know her. I've known Val since I was a little girl. And when her and her family moved to Ipswich, they were an absolute light in my life. See, I was a little girl who loved Jesus in a class where nobody even knew who he was. And Val's daughter Eleanor came and joined me in my class. And all of a sudden, I had a friend who understood. But gradually over time, Val's become more and more part of my story, because then she started coming to school as a teaching assistant and then learning to train as a teacher. And then she invited me to the children's club at their church and to holiday clubs. And then in the years that followed, as we were at CYM, she was always there to actively help and support us practically and prayerfully. And then recently, I've been learning more about her work as a Tear Fund champion and learning something extraordinary that I didn't know Val had been up to. So I've got a short video here, and I'd just like you to watch it.
I'm Val, and I'm away.
Val is strong, but she's got that strength of character too. She could have chosen to do that challenge for herself as a personal goal. People do it all the time, don't they? How far can I run this week? Can I manage to get my shopping in under £40 this week? We give ourselves personal challenges all the time, but Val chose to do that challenge for God, not for herself. She did it to impact the community that she's part of, and a community that she's not even physically part of, but is connected to her heart, the communities that Tear Fund's work impacts. She gave them the opportunity not only to live, but to thrive. And that's what happens when we work for God's kingdom. That's the blessing that we see. It's so much more long-lasting. That feeling of triumph if she managed to do 70 dead weights in 70 minutes would have been immense. But it would just be a memory. But the impact of raising those monies for Tear Fund and now with this video being able to take their message further goes on and on and on in a way that just one person's work on their own doesn't. But our work with God always has that multiplier effect because it's part of this bigger community. And this is a blessing that we seek as we give priority to God and his house. It blesses in a way that is beyond our comprehension. Val doesn't even know that I'm talking about her this morning. She won't know how many people share that video, how many thousands of views it gets on YouTube maybe. It goes beyond what she can perceive. So here we are, we're walking towards God's blessing. We're strong in heart and body, focusing ourselves on the living God and pursuing his way of living. And we're working for him, actively putting into practice what he teaches and commands us to do. And now we're back in a place where I often find myself, as I read once again that command to not fear. Do not fear. Fear not. Don't be afraid. We're called to be a fearless people again and again and again in God's word. Directly to individuals, and then later on in the Gospels, we see it spoken to all of us as followers of Jesus. And it was important then, but fear's become something else now, hasn't it? In our generation, where we see fear become an illness, and we call it anxiety. And we, as a church, need to be in a place to overcome. Because we have the secret that we need to do not fear. We know that when we put our trust in Jesus, that he's got us in a way that's beyond what we can comprehend. But somehow, each morning as we get up, there still seems to be those fears that niggle, that stay in our lives. Times where anxiety floors us. I've heard so many Christian leaders in the last year say that anxiety got beyond what they could control and they had to stop and have time out. It's become a sickness and an illness that it wasn't in Bible times. But there are things that we can do, and taking time out is important because that time out is time to draw closer to God. And in times closer to God is where we find the strength we need to overcome. We need those people who inspire us. I was listening to an American speaker called Jess O'Connolly this week, and she shared, "I don't want to get to the end of this thing and have lived a life that looks tidy and kept my feet in both camps. I don't want to get to the end of this thing and have built a great life for myself just in case he doesn't exist. I think Jesus is real, and that changes everything. So I'm asking God to give me the boldness and the clarity and the guts to live in a way in every area that says, if he's not real, I'm just plain crazy." She's asking God to give her the clarity and the boldness and the guts. Isn't that courage? And bravery, we can ask God to give us those things. This Jesus who laid his glory aside so we could be restored to him in all wholeness is who we overcome our fears with. And as we live and work with him and in him, he gets the glory. He laid it aside. But as we come together with him, That's what we do, isn't it? We do this to bring him glory. Fear is an ever-present thing in our lives, and we have to action to overcome it. To live a fearless life is not something that just happens, but it's something that we have to actively seek. To overcome, we have to step out in the faith that we know is within us. We have to believe that we can see through to overcome what is before us. We can reframe fears that threaten to come into our lives. I've been afraid of failing. And it's a fear that can stop you trying. But the truth is, failure is an inevitable part of our lives. I need to fail. It's important for me to grow that I fail and I mess things up. On Friday, I was leading a Bible art journeying workshop at the Farm by the Water Retreat Centre, and I messed it up. My 5 to 10 minute devotional talk at the start was 2 minutes long. I drew a blank. My notes meant nothing to me. Was the session then a disaster? No. God used that time. He needed to spend time with those people on a one-to-one. He didn't need my words that morning. So I might feel that I've messed up, but God still used that time mightily. You see, I needed to reframe that fear. I must make mistakes. I can't be scared to fail. I need to think that I must fail, because it's in those moments that God teaches me and he grows me and he gives me opportunities to walk closer to him, not in my strength, but in his. And then I know what that feels like. And I'm more likely to try again because it's not so scary. I might have been embarrassed. That doesn't really matter, because what I saw him do in the lives of the other people there was incredible. And we can do that over and over again with our fears. You might have a fear of going up to someone today and saying, I've got this problem and I'm scared and I need you to pray. But actually, when we have fears, we mustn't try and face them on our own. God called us to do this together. And so you need to think, in order to overcome this fear, I need to ask this person to pray with me. It's what we need to do, because we walk this together as a community. And I didn't want you to leave here today without being able to put in place something to remind you, to remember, an action point that you wouldn't forget. So I've put these pigtails, apparently, on each of your chairs, the bits of string. And I want to give you just a few moments to just think about this path that we're walking through, this path towards blessing. It might look like it's up and down. I think there's a photo of my family walking over some tree stumps. It goes in the same direction, walking towards God. And I want you to choose this morning and prayerfully tie a knot in your string. Is there something you're going to do to help you build your strength, your spiritual strength, your time with God? Is there something you're going to do, something that you've been meaning to do, some work that you're going to do this week, to continue as you pursue that walk towards God's blessing? Or is there a fear that you want to reframe and rename that's going to help you to take that next step forward in your walk towards Jesus? We're just going to have a song quietly playing as you just pray and consider those things.